The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
You would think if you'd listened to any of the news this week that the Federal Reserve meeting needed to be about 3 seconds long, and all that she needed to come out would say is considerable time, because all the focus this week was on Janet Yellen and the Federal Open Market Committee meeting and what they were going to do, whether or not they were going to retain considerable time in their comments, which they did. Sometimes we really get lucky around here, and today we're really lucky because we've got with us to explain all this and explain what the Fed really said, because there seems to be some dissension about what was really said. We're pleased to have with us today Doug Roberts. Doug is founder and chief investment strategist with Channel Capital Research. He's a contributor to AOL Money and Finance section and is frequently called upon by the media, such as us, as an expert on the Federal Reserve. He wrote a book called Follow the Fed to Investment Success, which outlines his proven approach with an investment strategy to help you make a lot of money in these markets. And so we're going to ask him right now what he thinks about that Fed meeting. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Mike.
And what did you think of the meeting? Obviously, she kept in the magic words, but there seems to be, I was reading your comments, and there seems to be some growing dissension on the Fed committee. You've got some people who are beginning to say, hey, wait a minute. So it looks like we got the hawks and the doves taking different sides now.
Yeah, I think really what you're seeing is the big news with the meeting isn't really so much what they said, but what's happening behind the scenes. We've seen some indications of this, I guess, for the last several months, that, you know, Janet Yellen has forged a kind of shaky consensus between the ducks and the hawks to end the quantitative easing program. But kind of once that comes to fruition, which will appear to happen next month, barring some unforeseen event, then it starts shifting really more toward conventional tightening. And the hawks have one point of view that's fairly definite, and the doves have another, and she's in the middle. And sometimes it may be a little bit difficult to reconcile the two. You know, big difference this time was we had Charlie Plosser sending last time, but, you know, we now had Dick Fisher really shifting from an editorial really now to an active dissent on the Fed decision. And he's really talking about raising rates you know, very early, much earlier than it appears to be from the FOMC statement. Now, that being said, I think the doves are still in charge. You know, you can exist with two or three dissents on the FOMC committee quite easily and continue, you know, along a, you know, their predetermined path right now. But that's going to basically create some situations where, you know, we might have the market a bit unnerved with comments coming out of dissenters and the possibility that there are other dissenters coming along as well. And you may also see, if the economy continues to weaken, dissent on the other side, that really the doves start saying we shouldn't be really tightening at all, we should be going in the other direction. And at that point, you know, again, I don't think it's going to really change the direction of the Fed, but it is going to add a lot more fireworks into the markets as these comments start to come out.
Now, I saw a chart, a couple of months ago that showed the folks on the committee and how many were doves and how many were hawks. And it looks like the committee doesn't really change its voting block for another year or so. So right now you've got more, even though you've got some folks there that are dissenting, the people that are actually voting are more dovish than hawkish. But that begins to change, what, in about a year or so?
Actually, you know, starting really beginning of next year, 2015. So
okay.
It's actually really more 4 or 5 months from now when we start to get some of the new members on the, you know, on the board. So, you know, at that point, but, you know, you really can't tell because it's dictated by the news. If you look at, let's say, one of the Fed governors, Carla Lakota from Minnesota, he at one point came on the Fed really as a hawk, and then basically the data changed him into one of the more dovish positions. So I think it's somewhat fluid, too. And another person that you've seen kind of go back and forth is really Charlie Evans as well. So, I mean, I don't think you can really say that. I mean, if you have a couple of, I mean, right now it's distinctly possible that they were thinking about dropping the language that they kept in. But, you know, the recent unemployment numbers may have changed their tune substantially and caused them to have pause in terms of making any major decisions. So, again, really that's what, I guess that's the title of my commentary, is really the Fed and the economy is right now in flux. And that's really what causes uncertainty in the markets. And as we've said, really the markets hate uncertainty.
Yeah, in fact, yesterday the market seemed to be very confused because you had bonds, gold, and the U.S. dollar all, they heard a hawkish viewpoint. And, of course, the stock market rallied, and I guess they were looking more from a dovish perspective. Now, the one thing that they're talking about this morning in the headlines that I would ask you to explain to viewers is there's a headline in MarketWatch that says, don't freak out over the Federal Reserve's dot plot. Now, apparently the dot plot is okay, they're not going to raise rates here in the near term. It looks like maybe second quarter of next year. But when they do, they're going to go higher than originally anticipated. Is that what they're talking about there?
Yeah, essentially they're assuming kind of almost like a hockey stick formation, something similar to when they do start raising rates. It's, again, going to be something more like 1994, where they raise rates quite rapidly because they anticipate that really the economy will begin strengthening. All this labor slack is going to disappear fairly quickly, and they'll be forced to react. But, again, those are anticipations, and if you look, you know, things can change in the future, and the future is uncertain. Or as they often say, life is uncertain, have dessert first. Right now, I mean, if you look as little as a year ago, people were thinking about the situation very, very differently. And then, you know, data came out, and at that point, the viewpoint of the Fed changed. So in that sense, Janet Yellen is quite correct that really the market is data dependent as to how the Fed reacts. So I think you've got to really take distant projections in stride and realize that they are distant in the future, and a lot can change up until then.
Now, quantitative easing ends next month, supposedly, if it continues. Have we seen the end, do you think, of quantitative easing and stimulus programs like that? Or is the economy healthy enough that we're not going to need that going forward?
I mean, I think right now you kind of have a tale of two economies. What the, you know, basically the quantitative easing, really the monetary policy is, you know, succeeded in doing is really stabilizing capital assets. You've seen that with the rise in the stock market, but it hasn't really done too much for the rest of the economy. So really what you're in a situation is what I call a tale of two economies. You know, you have basically the top very group, but it's really not the top 1%. If you look at some of the statistics, it's actually the top 0.1% that's really done very well and benefited from really the appreciation of capital assets. And that makes sense, because generally those people are wealthier. They're more likely to have a substantial portfolio, but a lot of the people who have jobs and really don't have a huge capital asset base haven't really benefited as much.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that's a lot of conversation right now. I suspect as we go into the election period coming in just a few months, we're going to hear a lot about the haves and the have-nots. It's one of the arguments that people have made about the market perhaps going farther than we even think it should, is because so many people have been left behind, and the average investor still hasn't come in. Doug, can you stay with us for just a few moments? On the other side of the break, I'd like to talk to you about interest rates and where you think they're
absolutely
going. All right, great. Listen, folks, we have a great show for you today. We're with Doug Roberts. We'll be back in just a few moments. Stay with us.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got with us today Doug Roberts. Doug is founder and chief investment strategist at Channel Capital Research. He's a contributor to AOL's Money and Finance section. And he's considered an expert on the Federal Reserve. In fact, he wrote a book called Follow the Fed to Investment Success, which is still out there. He's also part of another one that fascinated Peggy. I remember when she first introduced him to me, as he was involved in The discovery of U-869, a World War II German submarine off the coast of New Jersey, and is featured in the book called Shadow Divers. If I were you, I would suggest you get a copy of that, because that had to be interesting. Was that interesting as I think it would be? I mean, that must have been
definitely
fascinating.
If you're a history buff, you actually get to explore history hands-on.
Yep, yeah. In fact, we're going to ask him a question. There are two things I want to make sure I talk about. One is where do you think interest rates are going? But you gave us some history here during the break that
right.
I had never heard of before, and so I want Doug to share that with you folks. I asked him about what he thinks of Scotland. So first of all, tell us again, what do you think of the Scottish vote?
Well, I think right now it's going to still be unresolved either way. If it's as close as they're saying it's going to be, because when you have, when you have no clear dominance, and that may have been the mistake they made, is they just allowed a simple majority to make the decision to secede instead of basically something like a two-thirds majority. Because right now, I mean, even if you have 1-2% go either way, if you have it go really the way of pro-union, the UK is going to have to make some substantial concessions, you know, to pacify the Scottish independence side of the equation. Otherwise, this will come up fairly quickly in the next election. On the other hand, if you do have a vote to secede, that has to be negotiated. And if it's that close, there's a distinct possibility that there might be a that the split, we'll know it after the vote occurs, might occur on more demographic lines, with basically the southern portion of Scotland, the lowlands, being more pro-union with Britain, and really more the Scottish Highlands and the northern parts becoming more pro-independence. In that case, you could conceivably have a situation where, as part of the negotiation, the southern half of Scotland says thank you but no thank you and secedes really from the part that's declaring independence and asks to rejoin Great Britain. And that in itself isn't going to be resolved fairly quickly, and that causes additional problems with defense treaties, with a possible entry of Scotland into the EU. So I think either way, this issue is not going to be resolved definitely one way or the other.
No, absolutely right. But you told us about how West Virginia was formed. Folks, I don't know if you know this. I had never heard this story before. Could you give us a little information about that?
Well, during the Civil War, when basically Virginia seceded to join the Confederacy, Virginia actually consisted of both Virginia and West Virginia. But there was a significant pocket of people in basically the western part of Virginia that wanted to remain part of the Union. And at that point, the Union definitely wanted to encourage that. So basically, what is now West Virginia seceded from Virginia and then rejoined the Union as a separate state of West Virginia.
Wow. That's it. So Scotland could do the same thing. You are definitely a student of history. And so what kind of history are we going to make next year? When do you think rates are going up? There seems to be... There was a lot of folks that were thinking first quarter, but they seem to have scurried away now, and everybody seems to be pointing to June of next year. What do you think? When do you think rates are actually going to be?
I think it's going to be data dependent. As I've mentioned, it's really a tale of two economies, and really, I think they possibly would have started making inklings and remove the considerable period of time phrase from the statement this time, except the unemployment report was so bad that it basically gave them pause, because really what the Fed does not like to do is move in a direction and then be forced to react and reverse themselves. It loses credibility in terms of its decision-making and kind of gives the impression that things are out of control. So at this point, if we have weak unemployment numbers coming up over the next several months, it could be moved further and further out, even if the economy remains strong, especially if the inflation numbers, which came in, the top line number was actually deflationary because of the decrease in oil prices, but even the core number was flat. So there's not a lot of real, basically strength at that point to force them to increase. And as we've mentioned before, we are starting to approach an election year, a midterm election year, and then basically everybody will start campaigning for president. So at that point, you want a happy electorate when you go to the polls.
Absolutely. Do you think that rates are going to move up faster? Do you think we're in for low rates for a long, long time? A lot of people refer to Japan and the fact that they've been at or near zero interest rates for over two decades, in fact, almost 25 years now. As you look out on the economy, what do you see? Do you think we could be at low rates for a long, long time?
Conceivably possible. It really depends upon the problem that you have right now is there's no traction in terms of basically workers. For the most part, you ask for a wage increase or you tax additional costs. We've seen this with the health care program. We've seen this with additional taxes. People just start decreasing the number of people who are employed, or in the case of health care, to avoid, paying the situation, they'll either pay the fine and discontinue their health care program, or they'll sit there and they'll decrease the number of people or maybe substitute two part-timers for one full-timer so that they're not forced to give health insurance. This is a trend that's continuing until you see some type of a strength that's emerging. And really the only area you kind of see it is really energy. And then energy at that point is also fueling benefits in manufacturing. What we're now seeing is if you have a problem and your costs increase too much, you just shift all your production overseas. Until that changes, what you're starting to see inklings of is right now the United States may actually be the best house in a bad neighborhood. We're increasingly looking better than our European counterparts and also even some of our Asian counterparts as well. And that domestically produced energy is beginning to look a lot more secure than that we could get in really Europe or the Middle East.
So what are you telling your folks that you consult with about where do they get income? If somebody's retiring, if they're looking for income, what are you telling folks to do?
Unfortunately, they're being forced to stretch into risk, and that's why you've seen this incredible chase for yield, where people are going into anything that, yields a dividend. Some of the options we've given have been, bonds, but we hesitate to go too far up because of the risk involved
right. And
the low levels. But at the same time, also, people want to go for high yield, but you have to be careful what you buy there as well. So unfortunately, it's a bad situation for a lot of, let's say, older people who are now on a fixed income, and they're now being forced to take on more risk than really they're comfortable with.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that situation is going to change anytime soon. Well, one last
question.
What grade would you give Janet Yellen as Fed chair?
I mean, right now, given her situation, she's doing a reasonably decent job. She's forming a consensus. Again, it's given the tools that she's given. Many on the left and the right say that kind of like she should really do what they're supposed to do in terms of fiscal policy, but that's really not her job.
No, it really isn't. Doug, thank you so much for being with us and for sharing your insight this morning. We appreciate it very much. Thank you so much,
sir.
Thank you
for having me on, Mike.
Thank you. All right, folks, we'll be back here in just a few moments. Stay with us. You're listening to Straight Talk Money.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.